Welcome back to Hype Podcast. This is Hypeable.com's flagship show, where we bring you all of the latest news in entertainment and pop culture every week. My name is Pamela, and I'll be your host today, and I'm so excited to be joined in just a few minutes by 2018 Oscar nominee Julian Slater, who worked on the sound of Edgar Wright's Baby Driver. Julian actually scored two of Baby Driver's three nominations this year, including a solo nod for Best Achievement in Sound Editing, as well as one for Best Achievement in Sound Mixing alongside Tim Cavigan and Mary H. Ellis. And if you, like me, have seen Baby Driver since it was released, you will know that this film is special not only because of the story it tells, but because of the way the sound throughout the movie is used to kind of propel Baby's story along. And it just makes for such a wonderful final product. And so with that in mind, it was really, really fun to have Julian on to kind of pick his brain about how he went about creating that sound, fusing everything from ambient noise to chart-topping hits to the original score to kind of bring everything to life in a really, really cool way. So before we get him on the line, we do want to remind you about all of our contact information in case you want to get a hold of us. For starters, you can always reach us via Twitter. We are at Hypeable Hype on there. We are also at Hypeable Hype on Instagram in case you want to follow along on any of the pop culture related adventures the hosts are having in between episodes. If you have rather lengthy comments, you can leave them in the show notes on Hypeable.com for this particular episode. And alternatively, you can shoot us an email. Our email address is hype@hypeable.com. So thank you so much for tuning in for this week's special episode of Hype. And without further ado, here is our exclusive interview with 2018 Oscar nominee Julian Slater. Well, congratulations on all the success of Baby Driver. The film is phenomenal, and I'm such a sucker for movies where sound, you know, moves things along, and sound is almost like this secondary character that's very involved in the storytelling process. So this film is like right up my alley.
Oh, that's great. I love hearing that.
Yeah.
I really do. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, I spend months working in a dark room, sometimes in a small dark room, sometimes in a large dark room, and very rarely it does the work that we do as sound designers or mixers get picked up by non-industry people. And in fairness, it's not every day that one gets to work on a movie like Baby Driver. You know, I'm very lucky. I've managed to work with Edgar on all of his movies, and he is very much one of the kind of directors who appreciate sound and is aware of what sound is capable of adding to the final product. But then you take the idea and the notion of what Baby Driver is anyway and add that into the mix, excuse the pun, on top of everything. And it's like, it makes for this almost perfect storm of fun that we had by someone like me and all this time working on the movie. And by and large, you never really get feedback on it. Most people are only interested in Rotten Tomato score, aggregated critics kind of, how they respond to it. But when you get regular non-industry people who go and see a movie and come out and have great things to say about, you know, the work that you do, it's great. It's humbling and it's amazing. And it kind of makes my heart sing a bit, really, to hear people get the work that we did. You know, we spent a lot of time doing a lot of subtle and non-subtle and interesting, we thought very interesting and kind of crazy stuff, but we never thought anyone would particularly get it. We didn't really think that people would respond to it, and they have, and it's been a really good thing for us.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the thing about movies, I've been doing this not very long. I've been talking about like movies, TVs, books and stuff like that for about 4 years professionally. And I always tell like my editors, I want to talk to the people behind the scenes because, you know, actors are great, but it's like it's a completely different story in terms of what happens and like the life of a project to talk to people like you that are really, you know, kind of bringing it all to life. And with a film like
like Baby Driver, it's just, it's almost like a movie you have to see twice, because I saw it in theaters and the sound just kind of like hits you over the head like a sledgehammer in a great way. But then I was watching it back right before our chat and just kind of like listening to the sound, and you're talking about just like this perfect mix of different things. Like I even noticed in the, what is it, in the coffee run scene, the first one, you have like the ATM beeps that are synchronized with the music. And it's like something I would have never thought, because there's so much going on.
And that surprise, you see, and I, that kind of surprises me that you didn't notice the first time, but then we deliberately did make it all so that it wasn't this thing that, because if you're going to do a lot of, if you're going to do a lot of, we did, and you're going to do it over the course of an hour and 50 something minutes, you've got to do it in a way that doesn't fatigue the audience. You've got to do it in a way that is subtle in as much as it's, you know, overt sometimes. And so there's been a lot of people I know that have seen the movie four or five times and they're still picking up on, like that coffee run, I could, you know, I could wax lyrical about all the things that are going on that you, what you have no idea that are going on. And it's done deliberately subtly so that it's not in your face. And you kind of just, you just understand that everything is working perfectly with the music, but you're not necessarily aware of what it is. The jackhammers are all, as he walks past the building site, the jackhammers are working in time with the music. As he goes into the coffee shop, there's a guy standing outside who's typing on his iPhone and he's texting in sync with the music, whilst the music on his earbuds, the kind of is in time with the music, and the doorbell of the coffee shop is in time with the music. It's all this thing that, that, you know, you're not supposed to get first time or even second time, but it just gives you this kind of feeling of everything working as one, as a kind of unison symphonic soundscape.
And I love that you use that word symphonic, because I know a lot of people that are big classical music junkies, and their favorite thing about pieces of classical music is that it takes like a few listens for you to actually really appreciate all of the aspects of, you know, an orchestral piece, because one time you listen, you might pick up on the horn section. The other time you might pick up on something that like, you know, the cello did that you didn't hear the first time around. And I think that that's why for me, like this, like third time watching the film, it's like, I was, you know, the first time maybe I was like listening to the jackhammers, or the second time I was like paying attention to the fact that the lyrics are actually on different parts of the actual, you know, buildings themselves. And then this third time, it's like, there's the ATMs, and it's like, it's almost like mind blowing, because you could watch it again and again and pick up on different parts every time and just have a whole different appreciation for what's going on.
Yeah. And you know, and that's kind of the point of what, of it, you know, I'm a big believer in sound enhancing the storytelling process and not pushing away from it. And and also I think to that, to your point, I think because the movie itself is so different and it's so visceral, and I know a lot of people, because it kind of came out of nowhere, I know, you know, Edgar is not necessarily a huge, he's got a huge cult following around the world, but none of us expected it to be the kind of massive hit that it was. And a lot of people that I know who'd never even seen an Edgar Wright movie went to the cinema to see this movie called Baby Driver because they'd heard that it was good and didn't really know much about it. And because it literally, from the moment that movie starts, it pulls you in, and it's got the car chase, and it just kind of drags you by the, it grabs you by the scruff of the neck and kind of pulls you through. I don't think you do appreciate everything that's going on, both visually or orally, because you're kind of, you're sitting there kind of just being kind of, you know, you're so blown away by what's happening and you're so surprised by what's happening. So I think to that, that that's another reason why multiple viewings, not just for the sound design or the mix, just because there's lots of visual things in there and subtle things that you can only pick up on repeated viewings.
Yes, exactly. Now, I know your resume is like incredibly impressive. I was taking a little peek on IMDb earlier this week. You've done everything from, you know, comedies to action movies to kids movies, which is so amazing. But I would assume that something like Baby Driver, where the sound, you know, is like the movie was clearly written for sound in mind, it kind of changes everything. Does that kind of change the creative process that you go through when you're sitting down to add all this stuff in?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a firm believer that I'm only as good as the director I'm working with. A, because, you know, Edgar, because I have a relationship with Edgar that has lasted a fair few years now, and also the people he works with are those same collaborators. So, you know, Paul Matchless and John Amos, his two picture editors, we've all worked together on Edgar's movies now for many years. And that breeds an environment of creative kind of, how would I phrase it? You know, there's no fear of failing. You know, I know that I can suggest stuff that is pretty out there and wacky, as everyone else does. And I have no worries about it being shot down. It may not work. Quite often it doesn't work. But I know that I can suggest it, and I'm suggesting it to people I'm very comfortable in their presence with, and therefore it leads to more creativity. You know, I always kind of, I akin it to when you go on a first date and you sit with someone over dinner and you're kind of portraying this image of yourself that you don't, or sometimes, you know, you're trying to portray an image of someone that's not necessarily 100% you, but you want to come across as a certain kind of person. And if you're working with people you've never worked with before, there's always a bit of that to start off with, you know. But with someone like Edgar, because I've, you know, we have that relationship. It's just from day one, moment one, we know where we need to get to. We know we need to get from A to B. We don't necessarily know how to get there, but we know that these are our sensibilities. Now let's figure out how to do it.
So when you got the script, because I'm assuming that you read the script before you officially signed on board, how much of what you ended up adding to the sound was actually written in there, aside from like, would like to see ambient noise synchronized with music? I mean, is that something that you and Edward talked about after, like what you wanted to punctuate and how you wanted to do it? Or yeah, did you kind of draft it up and then send it his way? Like, how was that process?
Yeah, well, I guess the simple way to explain it is the stuff you see in camera is the stuff that was pre-designed to work with the music. So, for example, the coffee run, if you take that for an example, his footsteps and the vocal and the people in the street that are talking in sync with the music, that was all pre-designed and shot with that in mind. But then we wanted to add another, you know, we want to build up interest in other things off screen. So, for example, there's a girl who's jamming on roller skates and doing a kind of funky dance. The music that she's listening to on her ghetto blaster is not Harlem Shuffle, but it's a hip hop track that is being syncopated to work with the Harlem Shuffle track. But that's the kind of stuff that we come up with afterwards, because it's, you know, I can't speak for Edgar, but it's a journey of discovery. You know, I'd love to say that I sat down on day one and figured out everything that had to be done and realized where it would go and how to do it. But I sat down and I saw the first two reels, and I pretty much was shaking. I was trembling, but I was also kind of shaking because I didn't really know how to do it or you know, how to figure out all the kind of small puzzles. You know, it's a journey of discovery, and we all play our part, and it's a team effort. You know, I'm lucky to have a great team of other sound geeks who work with me and will equally make great suggestions, and some of them work, some of them don't work. But, you know, again, it's people not having a fear of suggesting anything and seeing what sticks.
Speaking of like trial and error, because I feel like that's a very common theme in any kind of artist's journey, was there a specific sound or scene that maybe you had a specific idea for before you started actually putting sound to tape that then ended up being completely different based on, you know, what ended up working better?
Yes, I can give you a couple of examples off the top of my head. One is the tinnitus sound, because the story point of why Baby listens to music is he suffers from tinnitus. So Edgar wanted it to be that whenever he's not listening to music on his earbuds, there's the sound of tinnitus in the movie, and you hear it because he's hearing it. Now tinnitus normally is that high pitched whistle that you hear. You know, I think of Saving Private Ryan on the beach. That works great for a 30-second burst, but if you're going to have it throughout an entire movie and sometimes pretty loud, you can't have that high-pitched whistle the whole time, because it's just going to grate on the audience. So we had to figure out. Originally, I just thought it was going to be the high-pitched whistle, but it's actually it's conveyed in many different ways. Sometimes it's brakes squeals in Cars. Sometimes it's held strings in Stephen Price's score. The level of it changes depending on how stressed Baby is. So at the beginning of the movie, other than the Sony logo, which we turned into tinnitus, it's not that present. But as you go further through the movie and Baby's getting more stressed and his world's kind of caving in on him, that tinnitus sounds gets louder and louder. But it's frequently changing. It's never just this high-pitched whistle. Like I say, it changes depending on his environment. So that's the first. And then, the second one, I would say that moment when when Baby gets his ears blown out by Buddy and Deborah's speaking to him and he's now being made deaf by the gunshots, we wanted just to have it totally mute so you couldn't hear what she was saying. But then we realized the audience members are going to be turning to each other and being confused because they don't understand what she's saying. So we had to figure out how to convey that he's deaf and he cannot hear what she's saying, but as an audience member, you need to hear what she's saying. So that was something else that we kind of made several attempts at before we landed on the thing that we were happy with.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that just like in terms of like a really cool sound that I really enjoyed was the beginnings of the flashback scene between, you know, Baby's mom and her singing and actually like leading up to that car crash and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How did you kind of go about creating a sound that you felt as though moved that particular storyline in that moment of the film?
Well, that's done through a variety of things. That whole sequence is it's firstly, we do a gag with the Sky Ferreira, who plays his mum. She's singing Easy, and we did this whole process of taking those lyrics and kind of flipping them backwards and putting them on delays and flying them around the speakers in the cinema, so you get this kind of weird dreamlike state. And we deliberately make it a very quiet sequence because that car crash is such a seminal thing to Baby. Not only is it the reason why he has the tinnitus, but it's, you know, he lost his parents, so it's a big thing. So we deliberately made the mix very delicate and quiet leading up to that, and then when that impact happens, it's a very loud and visceral thing. So it's playing with not only the sound elements, but it's playing with the mix and the levels of those elements to give it the biggest impact.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, like, I mean, levels is actually a very interesting concept too, because I imagine that plays a huge factor in terms of like trying to punctuate these amazing songs that are on the soundtrack without actually taking too much away from, you know, the recordings themselves. So was that particularly challenging?
Yeah, it was very challenging. So the all those music cues are, we mixed in, we had to basically remaster the music cues because, well, twofold. One is the Barry White track. In my mind's eye, Barry White sounds lovely. He's great. And it's like a 70s vibe and it sounds awesome and lush. You get that up on some big cinema speakers and you play it loud, it doesn't sound that great. So you have to do this process. And also it's just a stereo track. And we dubbed in what's called Dolby Atmos, which is, you know, the speakers above your head and all around you. So that's the first thing. You've got to kind of remaster it so that it sounds great for the cinema, which in of itself is a bit of a tricky process. And then also a lot of normally in movies, you have score that's been written to the action. So let's say it's a chase sequence and there's da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, and then someone speaks. The composer will by and large score around that and make a dip in the composition for when there's things that need to be heard. We didn't have that. We had music that ran from the beginning of the song to the end of the song. And, you know, and songs like, say, Freddie Mercury, Brighton Rock, where he's doing his falsetto, da, 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 that's a hard listen, but you need to listen to it loud because that's how Baby's hearing it. So you've got to do this kind of this pseudo balance of hearing Freddie at full volume, and yet you still want to hear car crashes and the gunshots, but you can't have it so loud or so painful that again it turns the audience away from what you're trying to achieve. And things like the Neat 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 by the Damned, you know, that's a punk rock band with thrash guitars that doesn't sound great loud. So you've got to try and plus you've got car chases and skids and you know, all this action happening at the same time. So the mix was an interesting and challenging thing, because we didn't have music or score that had been written specific to the action. These were songs from the 60s, 70s and 80s that not only didn't sound great because of the environment we were playing it in, but hadn't been written to work with the action.
That just sounds like such a careful balancing act, but that's,
yeah, you know. It is. And again, it's not, it's like you have to figure it out as you're doing it. The movie was just a whole lot of different puzzles to figure out. And you get to one, you figure it out, and then you go to the next one. That's kind of how we approached it.
Yeah. I imagine that as soon as you get it right and you're like, oh my gosh, that's it. It must be the most satisfying feeling in the world. So was there a particular scene that kind of gave you a lot of trouble that you just felt like so satisfied after you were able to write up on the board that, you know, put that little check mark by that scene, like, oh, that's done, you know?
Not any, I mean, kind of every scene had its own set of challenges. It's like, how do you, the first track, which is the John Spencer Blues Explosion, Bell Bottoms, every police siren in that whole car chase is sunk to work with that track. Now, that's fine if it's a constant tempo, but that track kind of varies between 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And if you've mapped a tempo of a siren to that song, it matches that song. Sometimes it sounds ridiculous because it's going from woo 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 to really fast and just doesn't sound right. So we had to figure out a way to, in the mix, the sounds that work musically and do sound believable are featured in the mix, and when they don't, when they then start to sound crazy and unrealistic, you take them out and bury them in the mix and you feature something else that does work. So it's like throughout the whole thing, every sequence had its own set of challenges. The scene where Buddy confronts Deborah and Baby in the diner to the Barry White track, Barry White is playing full guns there. So every car pass has been to work with eye movements, and the more severe of what the severity of the scene as it gets worse and you think Buddy's going to kill them, the car passes turn into truck passes and they become lower in register. And you've got things like coffee grinders going off in the background and speeding up to kind of ratchet up the tension. So kind of every sequence has got its own unique thing that once we did crack it, and by no means did it happen first time, you kind of sit back and give yourself a little pat on the back and say that's great, and that's now let's go on to the next one.
And I love that about the movie too, because when you think about that first car chase, and like the morning after the first big heist, everything is so seamless, everything is in sync with each other, even like the movements of the actors are in sync with the music. And then as conflict starts to build for Baby, it's almost like you add this complete other layer of sound that adds to the chaos of the feeling of the moment and stuff like that.
I'm so happy you picked up on that. So that's exactly right. That first car chase sequence is the only car chase sequence, or even foot chase sequence, of all the sequences that goes perfect for Baby. That's the one where you understand that he's really good at what he does and everything works perfectly for him. So for that car chase sequence, it's like over stylized. We've put like these kind of, we designed these whooshes on every car passed, and all the revs work perfectly in sync and they work to the pitch of the music and it all works. The next car chase sequence, which is the neat, 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 the kind of in the Yukon, that's when things go awry, and there is less stylized and it's more visceral. And then we start to detune the revs and the other sounds so that it starts to sound a bit discordant. So yeah, that's great that you picked up on that, because that was our intent. As his world starts collapsing in on him, then the diegetic sounds around him don't work quite as beautifully as they did.
That's so cool. I mean, like, and that probably just opened up so many more doors for you to play with. Maybe not like, well, probably also tempo, but also pitch, right? Of all of these different outside noises.
Yeah, totally. So it's a mixture of tempo, rhythm, pitch, and then the level that you play it at. And I think I might have said it before, you can have things that work so perfectly musical and almost too perfect. So, you know, we had instances of things that you just couldn't discern that they were different, that you thought they were part of the music because they worked so well with the music. And so then you have to take them out and kind of detune them a little bit so that they so that you can discern them from the music. A good example of that was that, like, there's a moment when Baby goes to dinner with Deborah and he puts his fingers all around the rim of a glass and it rings in sync with the music. And the first iteration of that sounded so perfect you couldn't understand it as a glass ring. So then we had to take it out and replace it with the one that was slightly off key from the music, but you could understand that it was actually its own sound in of itself.
You know, this might be kind of a bit of a silly question, but I'm just more curious about it. For me, I've seen a lot of old school Hollywood footage of sound designers, you know, trying to recreate accurate sounds of like footsteps on stairs and things like that. But my brother's a musician, mm-hmm. and I know nowadays, like when he goes into the studio, because of the producers, you know, like they have all these sound banks that they can just pull from. So if he wants a specific drum and doesn't have a friend that knows how to play it, they can just pull from, you know, sound banks and create that electronically. So for something like Baby Driver, even, you know, in your other films, how much sound are you actually creating from scratch versus how much comes from like a sound bank that's already pre-recorded?
The simple answer is as much as possible. You know, my job, I'm whoever it is who deems to employ me. Sometimes, you know, I get asked to become involved because of the picture editor. Sometimes I get asked to become involved because of the director, and sometimes because of the producer. But regardless of who it is, the reason is always the same. You know, a director has his or her own unique vision of what they want their movie to be, and it is I feel it is my responsibility not only to service what their desires for the project is, but to make it as unique sounding as possible. So, you know, even if I'm using sounds from my own library, and we for Baby Driver, every single car we went out and we recorded it afresh on the racetrack. So that's that red Subaru WRX and that first car chase sequence. We went out and recorded that, like, you know, spent 2 days on a racetrack. But then we got those elements back and we decided, you know what, it still doesn't, it just sounds a bit normal. It sounds a bit, you know, it sounds okay, but it doesn't sound amazing. So you then take those sounds and you blend them with animal roars, or you blend them with a Ferrari at times, or you blend them with, you know, sometimes a jet passed. And so, you know, my job is to try and make it as unique as possible. So it's a mixture of various different devices and resources, but the end product should always be something that stands on its own two legs as a piece of work.
Hmm. Would you say that's one of your the favorite parts of your job that you get to do, or is there something that you enjoy more than, you know, other aspects?
What I love about it is everything is different. Every movie is different and has its set of challenges, partly because it'll be its own thing. So, you know, like the last movie I did was Jumanji, which is, you know, big animals in the jungle as opposed to car driving. So that's got its own set of challenges. You know, every movie is different, but then also every director is different. You know, what director on movie A thinks sounds cool and what they envision will be invariably different to what the director of the next movie is. So my job is to tap into what it is that the director is after, and at the very least give them what it is that they want, and hopefully, you know, push that on forward and give them more than what they realized was possible. That's kind of my job, to service the production, but then also to enhance it and hopefully push the soundtrack in areas that perhaps they hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, I saw Jumanji as well, and it was so fun and so amazing, but they're like apples and oranges comparing even Sound on Jumanji versus Sound on Baby Driver, although there are probably some similarities. But in comparison to just like a general project, it was working on Baby Driver a bit more extensive just because, you know, there was just so much more sound to fill and play around with. Like, how does that compare to just like a normal project? Or is there a normal project? Maybe there's not.
There is no, there's not. There is no normal project, and every project has its own. I mean, we did Baby Driver in London. We mixed it in London, and I now live in LA. And I literally got off the plane on a Friday night from Baby Driver and started Jumanji on the Monday. And I had one weekend of stress-free. Oh, I finished this job, and I was really happy with it. And then I roll in Monday morning, and I look at the cut of Jumanji, and I'm like, oh my God, I've got a whole new. It's not like, oh, this is going to be easy. It's not. It's the start. It's a whole new set of challenges. And if you're like me, you want it to sound to be something that either, it sounds different and unique and bold and, interesting. So it's never a question of being able to relax. It's like kind of it's a double-edged sword that I have, really. It's what I believe is my strength, but it also means that I can never relax. I can never kind of sit there and freewheel and just put some have an easy time of it, because I always want it to sound, as good as it can.
Yeah, I imagine like just like, you know, writing for me, like your work is almost never done because you can always go back and listen to something and say, "Oh, I wish I would have tweaked that a little bit because I know better now," or, you know, but I'm so
Yeah,
satisfied.
totally.
But
I
yeah.
was on. Yeah, no, I was just gonna say. I remember I was on the plane because I left whilst the my co-mixer did what's called deliverable items. So you do like the M&E, which is the version minus the dialogue, so that the Germans can put their dialogue across it. And I was on the plane, taxiing, and I remember texting Tim to say to him, oh, "I've just had an idea. Can you go in and update the main version?" So it's like you never you know until the very, very last moment do you let it go. You're always striving to kind of make it that perfect 10 out of 10. I would add that I feel like I never have done. There's always time. Every time I watch a movie that I've worked on, I sit back and go, ah, I should have done that, should have done this, should have done that. I've never watched it and said, oh, that's perfect. And I'm resigned to the fact that I never will. But there you
Yeah,
go.
but that just, I mean, like, I don't know, it personally is a creative in a different way. It almost kind of like spurs you on to do better next time and stuff like that. So that's I feel like that's normal. You know, you're always going to be your hardest
Yes, you know,
critic.
yeah, and that's how we're made, and we're probably better for it.
Totally. Well, I know that like personally, I would never be able to notice if you did something wrong on Baby Driver, because it's just like I said, I've seen this movie a few times, and every time I just pick up on something new, and I think that that's what makes it so exciting. And it hasn't been boring yet. You know, I went to see it like by myself, went to see it with some friends, went to see it with my mom, saw it again by myself, and it's like every time I can take something away from it that's a little bit different, and that's what makes it really cool.
Yeah, that really does warm my heart to hear you say that. It really does. It's just it's for me, it's important that movies like Baby Driver do well. It's great for cinema. It's great for people like Edgar deserve to be successful so that they can do the next Baby Driver, whatever their next movie is, the next Scott Pilgrim, the next Baby Driver, the next Shaun of the Dead. So, to hear people such as yourself saying such great things, I think it's just, I think ultimately it's good for cinema.
Yeah, definitely. And for creativity, I mean, we talk a lot on the show about how sequels are great, but we're always looking for something different. And, you know, every once in a while you get, you know, the Swiss Army Man's, the Baby Drivers, and it's just like an explosion for the ears, for the eyes, for like all of your senses. And it's just really cool when movies like that come out. Like, we enjoy a lot of movies, but you always know when something's a little bit more special, or when something, you know, has a little bit extra.
Well, I suspect that's one of the reasons why it did so well when it came out, when it did, because it was right in the middle of number twos and threes and fours of different movies and franchises, and it was this kind of beacon of uniqueness, and I genuinely think that is in part to do with its success. The fact that it, you know, it was, it came out at a time when it, you know, it was surrounded by, you know, these franchise movies. And I have not, you know, I've worked on franchise movies. I will continue to work on franchise movies, and I love to see franchise movies. But like I say, the Baby Driver movies are equally as important, because, you know, it's good for cinema to have stuff that pushes boundaries.
Yes, definitely. I totally agree. I love that. We are kind of running towards the end of our time. So before I let you go, I wanted to invite you to join me in a segment that we do on this show every time we release an episode. We always start the show with our segment called How We Hype, and that's where we tell our listeners things that we've been enjoying in pop culture, be it movies or TV shows or music or even books. So I wanted to ask you if there's anything in pop culture that you've been enjoying that you kind of just want to hype up for anybody that's listening that might want a recommendation.
Oh, that's how to put me on the spot, isn't it? I would say two things that come to mind, and one is very current, one is less current. I love the Gorillaz album that came out in middle of last year. I'm still listening to it, Humans. I think Damon Albarn is an absolute genius. And I went to see him at the Staples Center a couple of months ago, and it was mind-blowing, and he was mind-blowing. And then I would say Shape of Water, which I watched a couple of nights ago, for the same reasons that I hold Edgar and Baby Driver in high regard. It's a unique, bold piece of cinema that, you know, by rights probably, you know, you wouldn't expect it. It has done it, and it's doing extremely well. And I just think again, it's a great example of a unique filmmaker who we all deserve to have in making more and more movies.
Those are two awesome recommendations, and I'm sure that our listeners are going to be really excited to, you know, discover those if they haven't already stumbled upon them. So thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you so much taking the time to chat with me. This was so much fun for me. I love getting to pick people's brains that are involved with, you know, anything musical. And sometimes that has to do with sound. So this was really fun.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been an honor to talk with you.
Thank you so much, Julian. I hope you have a great day.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.